This is Michael Bailey Smith, Ben Grimm from the original Fantastic Four movie, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. It's clobbering time.
Welcome back, Comic Book Nation. This is Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. It is indeed clobbering time this week. I've put away all the breakables in the lair today in preparation for my guest, who played the mighty Ben Grimm, Michael Bailey Smith. As you know, all this month we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of what would have been the official release of the first Fantastic Four movie. Alas, it was not to be, as the film was unceremoniously shelved, only to find life on the tables of bootleg VHS tapes and DVDs at comic book conventions. But we comic book fans are a dedicated bunch of individuals, and like the Human Torch, we have kept the fires burning for this little movie, which is getting a lot of attention these days. Almost 500,000 views on YouTube, a new documentary about to be released. That film's trailer has been seen over 300,000 times. If the intention was to keep this film hidden, well, the Fantastic Four have triumphed once again. Joseph Culp, who played Dr. Doom, and the film's director, Oli Sassone, are in the on-deck circle, but as far as Marvel's first family is concerned, there's one heavy hitter left to go. And when I say heavy hitter, I mean it. It's Michael Bailey Smith, who played the ever-loving, blue-eyed Ben Grimm, who, as we all know, becomes the Thing. Now, our chat is just moments away, but first, let's learn a little more about the talented man who rounds out the Fantastic Four, Michael Bailey Smith. Michael Bailey Smith got to see the world in his early days. As the oldest of six kids in an Air Force family, Michael and his siblings traveled a lot, ending up in Tehran, where Michael developed an interest in sports, particularly football. Unfortunately, the opportunities to play football in the Middle East were limited, to say the least, so Michael enlisted in the Army, spending 3 years as a paratrooper. Eventually, Michael got back to his home state of Michigan, where the lure of football once again beckoned. A knee injury sidelined his career just before he was able to hit the field with the Dallas Cowboys, but the NFL's loss was Hollywood's gain. Inspired by the likes of Schwarzenegger and Ferrigno, the now bulked-up Smith made an imposing presence on television shows like Renegade, Babylon 5, Conan, and The X-Files. But for comic book fans, it's the 1994 flick The Fantastic Four that's most memorable. Michael was cast as Benjamin J. Grimm, college buddy of Reed Richards, and test pilot for the ill-fated flight through a storm of cosmic rays. Now, it's interesting to note that while Michael's presence is immense in the film, that's not him in the Thing costume. Producer Roger Corman, working on a minuscule budget, wanted to get the costume right, so he had it built before casting the movie. When Michael came on board, his 6'4", nearly 300-pound frame was perfect for the role, but not for the smaller costume, which was ultimately filled by stuntman Carl Serfalio. But no worries, as you'll soon find out, Michael made sure it was his acting abilities behind all the clobbering. Well, my guest today is a veteran of sci-fi fantasy projects. Let's count them down. Men in Black 2, Babylon 5, Star Trek Voyager, Conan the Adventurer, The X-Files, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Charmed, and one of our favorites right here in Comic Book Central. He played Ben Grimm in the original Fantastic Four movie. Joining us now is Michael Bailey Smith. Michael, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You obviously have a lot of experience with these types of projects, these sci-fi fantasy projects. What attracts you to these types of roles?
I don't know. I like doing them. They are so a big departure from how I am in real life. So as an actor, it's always great to play something that's totally out of your character. And, that's what it's like, you know, so it's pretty cool. I think the Fantastic Four and playing Ben Grimm is probably closer to what I am in real life compared to anything else that I've done.
I was going to say, because there, you know, I was kind of looking at your bio, and then I also looked at quote unquote Ben Grimm's bio, his fictional bio. There's a couple of similarities there. You got a military background.
Yes, sir.
As well as Ben Grimm. You were Army?
Yes, I was in the 82nd Airborne. I was a paratrooper. Yes, sir.
Okay, and Ben was the Marines. And college football for both you and Benjamin Grimm.
That's right. And if you look at the film, I am wearing a Letterman jacket that has a big E on it, and that's my actual letter jacket from college.
Oh, nice. Did you? Was that part of a backstory that you created, or was that in the script? Because I think that beginning part just kind of moves quickly into when they get their powers.
Agreed, but it's something because, you know, Ben Grimm went to Empire State, right? So, right. And so I went to Eastern Michigan, so it has a big E on it. So there's a nice synergy there.
Ah, we love when actors do their homework on these comic book characters. You got the background on them down, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit. You always have to do that. You have to honor, the writers and the history on that. So that's with anything that I've done. So I try to do as much research, because the more you know, the better, the more natural you are, the more prepared you are. So,
had you met Stan Lee or Jack Kirby? Because Jack Kirby passed away, I think, right before this would have been finished. So right before this time, like when you guys were shooting the film, did you meet either of them?
I met Stan Lee. He came to the set actually during the scene when I bump into Alicia Masters. I think it's at the headquarters kind of situation where the lab was at and stuff. There's a part where I bump into her. I'm going up the stairs. She's coming down the stairs, and I knock the statue out of her hand. It breaks all over the place. And that he was there on the set that day. And I remember him coming up to me, and he goes, "You're what I envisioned, as Ben Grimm." And I'm like, wow, that's a great compliment.
So. Oh, it's a huge compliment. I mean, from the creator himself. I mean, it's not going to get any better than that. Did you get to pick his brain a little bit on the character?
No, not really. It's like talking to God. So, you just kind of like, thank you so much. And you're kind of dumbfounded after that. So.
You just want to stay under the radar, you don't want to disappoint him, I guess, at that point.
Agreed.
Another one of these individuals that you worked with, these kind of larger-than-life individuals, we'll step back in time a little bit, and then we'll go up to Fantastic Four. But you worked for Aaron Spelling on Charmed.
Probably I was in the beginning of 2000, I think, 1999, 2000, yeah. I actually did a co-star role playing a Grimlock on the TV show Charmed, and I was doing a great job, and I guess I was. I always think as an actor, I always think I suck. So, that keeps me working harder and keeps me humble, at least I try to be. And I remember... We were like, it was a nice guest star role, and I remember the producer come up to me several times. Several of them said, "Hey, you're doing a great job." I said, "Oh, thanks." And when you get those kind of compliments, you just like, thank you so much. You just move on because you don't want to start getting a big head or anything like that. Then my manager, when I was in the trailer, I was finishing up the day, and my manager called me and said, "Hey, guess what? They want you to come back, next week." I said, "That's great." And I'm thinking the same character. He said, "No, there's this character called Beltazor, and he's the alter ego of Cole, who was the lead character, one of the lead characters on that show, and you were going to play this character in Beltazor." And I guess they had filmed it with another actor / stunt guy, whatever, and it wasn't working out. And I guess they wanted to hire an actor, an actor who was kind of physical like me. So that's how it started. So I went back and reshot some of the stuff. What they had shot before, and then I just carried out from there, and I did it for almost 2 years, so it was good.
Yeah, you kind of had the Arnold Schwarzenegger thing going, where you had the acting and the bodybuilding, because you had gotten into bodybuilding at one point, right?
Yeah, after football, I'd always, even when I played football, I always had that bodybuilder type. I was an offensive lineman, in college, and I was like over 6'4" and about 290 pounds, And back in the early 80s, that's huge. Nowadays that's kind of small, but back then it was huge, and I was really fast. But I was always ripped. I didn't have a big gut, nothing like that. You see most typical offensive linemen. I was ripped, and so I kind of after I spent some time with the Dallas Cowboys and blew my knee out, and then after that I went and got into bodybuilding for a while. I competed a couple times, and then. Yeah, so that's kind of, and then from there.
Was Arnold sort of an inspiration to you? Did you kind of look to him and say, the acting thing, or did the acting thing just kind of come in a different fashion?
Yeah, it did. I mean, one of my favorite movies, of course, is the original Conan. I've always loved that movie. But I also liked Lou Ferrigno. I'm a huge fan of Lou Ferrigno because he was always an underdog. Because I've always been an underdog. And everything I've done, I've always been that guy where people said, "You're stupid. You can't do this. You're going to fail." And I could tell you story upon story about that happening, you know, with the military or with football. You know, I was a walk-on, you know, at football. You know how difficult that is to become a walk-on and in your second year, you start, and then you become a preseason All-American by your junior year. I mean, and then you go to the Cowboys, and you start out as a walk-on. How difficult is that? Or like when you do start the acting thing, you know, even like, well, I'll back up from that. You know, I grew up being skinny, you know, bone thin. I was over 6'4". I went to military, weighed 160 pounds. And, you know, for me to become a bodybuilder, it's like, that's a huge pipe dream. Who would ever think of that?
You're Captain America come to life, weren't you? Steve Rogers.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm that guy in the back of the comic book that, you know, the Mr. Atlas thing, you know.
They kick sand in the face.
Yeah, that was me. And then same thing with acting. I mean, who am I to think that I could become an actor when you got everybody in the whole entire world wanting to become an actor? And who am I to think that I could step into that world? A guy who was afraid to get up and to talk to anybody or shy. I had a stuttering problem when I was younger. All these things. Who am I to think that I could do that? But you know what? I'm that underdog. I draw to those kind of characters, and I love that. And Ben Grimm is a lot like that in the Fantastic Four. He's that outcast. He's the underdog, the guy that doesn't fit. And I was always that guy as well. So that's why I really related to that character and what he was going through.
Well, that really is the almost the Lou Ferrigno story too, because I think he had a very similar background, and then he had obviously had the hearing problems. People were making fun of him, and he was able to channel that into what he did. So did you? So you looked for him for inspiration, and I'm going to show these people.
Agreed, I did. Ferrigno is more of my height. You know, he's a big dude, and I know him personally. My wife is a consign, and those two have communicated before. Like he trains at Gold's Gym in Venice, you know, and he has when I trained there too back in the early '90s, and you know we used to hang out together a little bit together and know each other in the gym, and my wife knows him, and I've always been a big fan of his. When I was in the military, other guys would have pictures of chicks on their walls and in their barracks, but I had pictures of bodybuilders. I had pictures of Lou Ferrigno and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the you know the colonel would come in and do an inspection, and they always say, "What's wrong with you?" You know, I said, "Well, I want to look like that," so you know that's kind of pretty funny.
That's I always had pictures of Steve Martin in my locker when I was in school. People are like, "What's wrong with you?"
Yeah, I agree.
I like comedy.
But, you know, but with Schwarzenegger, you know, what I like about him is that he's a winner. He's a guy that he's confident. He's a winner. I mean, he's a guy who can out-psych you. And I like a mixture of both. I like the underdog aspects of Lou Ferrigno, but then also the conquering hero of sorts with Schwarzenegger. So,
well, it's almost two different approaches too, because you know Ferrigno is just kind of like so laid back, and then Arnold is like right in your face, so bold. But the success for both can't be denied. You know, it's funny too is that in the comics, the Hulk and Thing are always mixing it up. So, did you ever like talk to Lou Ferrigno and hey, let's do a charity event and like throw down? Do a little.
No, I actually did it. I actually did a movie with him. I did a movie. He did a movie called Cage 2. I played this when I first started. I think it was after the Fantastic Four. So I went through a period of doing just a lot of little films and doing whatever I could.
Did you get to mix it up with him in there?
Yeah, I did. I fought him.
So we did get a Hulk thing throwdown.
He didn't know that. he didn't know that I played Ben Grimm. But it was cool. It was funny. He was afraid I was going to hurt him, because I'm a pretty intense guy, and I come after him pretty hard, and it's all movie acting, so, you know, you're pulling your punches and things like that. But he went to the director and goes, "Can you please let Michael know that this is not real, and, you know, I don't want to get hurt." I'm like, "Really? You're like the Incredible Hulk." So, and wow. I was a huge fan of the Incredible Hulk. I could tell you a huge fan, especially, I mean, I know that people bag on the TV show, but I love the TV show. I could tell you exactly when the Hulk turned on. He turned... Yeah, when Bruce Banner turned in the Incredible Hulk, at 20 minutes after and pretty much 10 minutes till. About 10 till.
Yep.
It ended. So it was always timed. And no matter where I was at, this is in college when this was coming in the 80s, no matter where I was, it always came on Friday. I think it was Friday nights.
Friday night, yeah, right before Dukes of Hazzard, I think.
Yeah, and I would, no matter what I was doing, I would stop. And I would stop, and I had to go. If I was at a party, like in the wintertime, whatever, I was at a party, it was my college party, I would have to find a TV somewhere at the party and watch The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, no DVRs back then. I mean, you either caught it or you didn't, you know? Maybe a little VHS, but that was about it.
Yeah, I've seen every episode of that show, so.
You and me both. Yeah, I always watch the clock, and I'm like, yep, it's time for him to Hulk out. You knew the green eyes were coming.
Yeah.
You know what's great too is you watch that like the very first episode. I mean, no CGI, nothing. I mean, it's him.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no,
that very first episode, he was massive. Yeah, totally believed it. So,
Well,
let's chat a little bit about the Fantastic Four. We talked about 2014 is the 20th anniversary of the film. Can you believe that?
It's pretty remarkable that people are still talking about it. So, I mean, they have this whole thing going on with doing this. A documentary on it, and just remarkable. I think I always tell people that if it would have just been released, it would have been released and went away, and no one ever talked about it. But because it was shelved and the whole controversy behind it, it's got a life of its own. So
that's the theme that's come up in every interview we've talked to everyone involved with the project, and it's just become so much bigger in not having been released. So how did you come to find out about the film in the beginning? How was this pitched to you?
I was doing a TV show called Renegade with Lorenzo Lamas, and they said, hey, you know, I booked the show, and they said, hey, before you go down to San Diego to go film as a guest star role on it, that we want you to go and read for this movie. And so I did. I went and read, and I did a pretty good job. And you kind of know when you do a good job when you get done reading, and then the casting director, like Mark Sykes, is there, and his assistant, another cast director was there, and they looked at me, and they said, hold on for a second. And they went out of the room, and also they brought in a producer, and they had me read again. And I'm like, okay, thank you so much. I'm like, can I walk out? And that's it. You know, when you walk out, there's like 20 other guys who look just like you. You're in the foyer, you know, so I like, whatever. So I went down in San Diego, did the Renegade, and I remember it was over the weekend, so normally TV shows are shot in 6 days, and it was one of those, start like on a Wednesday, and then you shoot on Saturday and have Sunday off to start again on Monday, and they said, hey, can you, my manager at the time called me and said, hey, can you get up back up to L.A. and come back for a callback, and I said, okay, so I went back up there, and that's when I met Ole, and I read, and that form was like, it was on a Saturday afternoon and whatever. And I went in there, just me. And I said, well, I think I have a pretty good shot at this. It was just me. And it was pretty cool. So you always look too at the sign-in list of the other actors, and there wasn't too many other Ben Grimms in there reading. So I felt pretty good.
Well, you mentioned that you're a fan of the Hulk TV show. Were you a fan of comic books as a kid?
A little bit, you know, not a lot. I wasn't, but like with everything that if I book something, you know, I researched the holy crap out of it. So I really do. Once I did, I became a fan of the Fantastic Four.
What did you use to do your research?
Basically, for me, it was reading comic books. So I did as much as I could.
Early ones, like very big, like Stan Lee, Jack Kirby. Did you go a little more modern?
Yeah. I pretty much an array and a mixture of things. I went to a couple of comic book stores, and I asked them, you know, I didn't tell them what I was doing. I just said, hey, I want to know everything I can about the Fantastic Four, and, you know, in particular, you know, the Thing and Ben Grimm. And so people steered me to the right comic books, what to read, and that's what I did. So.
Well, you obviously did your homework. I mean, how many comic books did you go through? I mean, and how long of a period of time were you researching?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I mean, there wasn't a lot of time. We you know, I read on December, and we started filming December 31st. So I only had a couple weeks.
Wow.
So it was crash course, you know, of this. So, I spent probably a week or so of just reading a lot of everything I could. I read a lot of comic books. So,
what did you find out about the character that in your research that I like that. I'm going to bring that, whether it's in the script or not, I'm going to use that as the backstory. You mentioned a little bit about the university and things like that, but what did you find in the character of Ben Grimm that you're like, that's what I want to do?
Well, for me, the big thing is the struggle, even with Reed Richards, even though that they were, friends and things like that. And, it's like, and I relate a lot to like real life. I mean, I have friends of mine that physically I am stronger than them, and I could probably smash them in 2 seconds, but they are stature wise or their position, in life is one of they make more money or whatever. And so there's a little bit of that going on. And with Reed Richards, Ben kind of looked up to him, and they were like brothers. There's still a competition there, to a certain extent. And I wanted to bring some of that to that. And especially you can see that in some of the scenes, like for instance, around the fireplace thing after the crash landing, and Ben, asked Reed, what do we do? What to do? It's like asking your older brother. You got us in this situation. You need to get us out of this. And so that's kind of what I brought to it, along with just I think my own natural motivation, or we don't call it, of being an underdog. And I've always been an underdog my whole life, from being skinny to being picked on when I grew up. Everything, all that kind of stuff, just naturally came out. Playing Ben Grimm. And I think sometimes if you overthink it, then it gets too, it gets too crazy. Just learn, then forget it, and just go do the role. So,
yeah, I guess that's always the trick too in playing the character. You see it in Michael Chiklis' performance, in that, do you play it as you're blaming Reed Richards, so there's anger there, or do you play it as desperation, like how are you going to help, or is there some combination of both? How did you see it? Was it more anger?
The thing is, for me, it's like anything, you have to accept responsibility for your own actions. And that's how I live my life, to a certain extent, I mean, it was me who flew the ship, right? Or it's Ben who flew the ship. I mean, I didn't have to do it, but I did it, Reed asked me to do it, and I think it was one of those things. It was not even a question. It was just, it's what I'm doing it, And I didn't have to, because it had been somebody else. So I think it's something where it's not blame. It's just, okay, get us out of this. Get us out of situation. So that's how I kind of, if I remember how I played in this, pretty much how I did, was kind of like that.
Yeah, and he's very much, that comes out in the script and also in your performance, he's very much a man of action. Because even at the beginning, it's not Reed that jumps in to try to save Victor, it's you. You're the one that tackles him and knocks him out of the way. You think he'd be nicer to you for saving his life?
Yeah, but that's Reed Richards.
That's Reed and that's Victor. Yeah. That's the characters locked in. Which Ben Grimm do you like? Is there? I mean, sometimes they artists and writers make him so that he's locked forever in that. In that rocky body. Some have him switching back and forth like the Hulk does. Which one do you kind of like? Which one do you see as more advantageous?
I like the one where he does switch back and forth, because you get it kind of, because it brings more, because if you stayed in that rocky state the whole time, then you'd kind of forget about your what you look like, or your human side, or what you want to call it. But if you go back to that human form and then back to the rocky state, then you get a taste of what it was like, and you want to get back there. So it provides more angst, I think, more desperation, and more depth of character, of wanting to figure out and try to, because that's what the thing wants to do. He wants to get back to being a human again.
Yeah, I always thought that gave the writer a little bit more of an advantage, too. We've seen that play out in the Avengers with Ruffalo's Hulk, where he just says, what the secret is, I'm always angry. And boom, he just transforms into the Hulk. And I think that's why that character works so much better in the Avengers than it did, in some of the other ones, is that he just has total control over that. I just think it's cool. I think it's cool, and I think it's easier for an actor at that point. Plus, you get to see the actor a lot more.
Agreed. There's always that selfishness part of it. Yeah, I always say, I always, when I first started acting, I had an acting coach who told me, if you're in a role or something and they ask you to wear sunglasses, you know, you got to try to, as much as possible, to try to dissuade them from you having wearing sunglasses, because your eyes are, you know, a gateway to your soul. And if you cover up your eyes, you know, you're cutting off your, you know, you're cutting off everything. And I'll see these new actors or whatever. I'll be doing a role and I'll see some background guy and he's got sunglasses on, trying to look all cool. I said, dude, you need to take those off. Just telling you right now. And I tried to explain to him. So
yeah, half your performance is taken out right there.
Agree.
Easily. You are not in the actual suit, though. And this was what I always found interesting, is that the production on this went so fast, they had to get the suit made before you were cast. And you are, like, much bigger than the suit.
Agreed.
Is that okay with you? Were you okay with that, or were you like...
No, I wasn't.
Okay. You want to be...
I was not okay with it. And everybody knew that I was not okay with it. You know, I thought that when I landed this role, I would do both. And they said, no, you're just going to play the human form. And then we have a stunt guy, because Roger Corman has history with actors who tried to do all the stunts, and then halfway through the beginning of the film, that actors like either passing out or getting hurt or something like that. So they said this is going to hire a stunt guy and put him in the suit. And so I know there's been a lot of things written about that, about how upset I was. And I was pretty upset, because not at Carl Cefalio, who was probably one of the greatest guys in the world, not at him, just at the situation that was presented. And so, yeah, I was like, I couldn't believe it. So what I did, I said, well, how can I make the best of the situation? And that's where I basically went to the production, the director, and I went to everybody, and I went to Carl, and I said, listen, I said, what I would like to do, and I'd like to get your approval for this, is that I would like to be there every time you do a scene, so then you and I could work through it, walk through it, and so your mannerisms are what are mine, and basically you're doing what I would have done. And so then there's synergy there between the two. And this kind of worked the same way when I did Charmed, right? So I did Charmed, and I played the evil half of Cole, who was the human form. That was, I forgot the guy's name.
It's actually Julian McMahon, who ended up playing Dr. Doom.
Agreed. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And we were doing,
and Rebecca Staub got to work with him, too, on Nip Talk. So there's these Dr. Doom connections.
It's very, very small world. But Julian and I, like, when I would do a scene, you know, as a Balthazar, you know, I would go to him and say, how would you do this? You know, that's, so it was my responsibility. So I felt the same thing between me and Carl, that, you know, I'd want to make sure that there was, because I wouldn't want him to do something totally different that would be different than what I would do. And I would, because especially I knew I had to come back in and do the voice for all of that. So it would be, you know,
yeah, so that's your voice we hear, though, in the film.
Yeah, agreed. And they just tweaked it. They tweaked the voice. And if you ever see that film, they forgot to tweak the voice at the end. So when the thing is walking down the stairs, when to clear the way for Reed Richards and Sue Storm when they got married, I think the thing says, come on, guys, you know, make some room, whatever like that.
Clearing a path, right through.
Yeah, so that's my voice. So.
That's fantastic. So actually, when you do say it's clobbering time, that's you.
Yeah, of course.
You got to say one of the most iconic catchphrases in history. That's actually pretty cool. Well, how well do you think that the film does in capturing the essence of the comic book? Because you said you did a lot of research. You know, you just kind of crammed at the beginning there. Just looking at what you knew from the comic books and then what – because I think that's what Ollie had mentioned to us in other interviews, was he wanted to bring that comic book to life.
Agreed. Even look at the way that some of the shots were set up, you know, the tilted 45-degree angle thing on certain things, the real close-ups of Doom, you know, and, you know, some of that. I mean, to me, that's right. If you could take screenshots from the film, you would put that into a comic book, and it would look exactly, to me, exactly like, you know, Stan Lee and those guys wanted. That's, you know, the only thing is missing is the multi-million-dollar production value. I mean, you know, so, but other than that, I thought the way it was shot, the way it was lit, all these things was straight out of what a comic book, you know, like. So I haven't seen the other films. I refuse to see those other films. Just me, even my two boys, I've seen glimpses of them, but kind of.
Why is that?
Why don't I want to see them?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't. It's, to me, it's like, this is a crazy analogy, but I've said it before. It's like, you know, you dated some girl, she's broken up with you, and she's dating someone a lot better looking. I really don't want to see that guy. You know, I don't want to see the new guy that she's dating. You know, I just don't, because I just don't. So it's kind of like the same way. I don't want to see the multi-million-dollar film of the Fantastic Four. I just want to stay with mine.
So you've never met Michael Chiklis?
Nope, never met him.
The two of you, you're at a comic book convention, and all of a sudden Michael's at the comic book convention. Do you go up and meet him, or are you just like...
Of course I would. But the only thing is, I bet you...
I just want to make that clear that you're just like not being completely standoffish.
No.
It's like,
no,
you know...
No, I don't want to see the film. So, yeah. But how much you want to bet that he's never seen the original Fantastic Four? I bet you. And if he did, I'd be surprised. Or you wouldn't even know about it.
Yeah.
So, and here's something that's quite interesting. So after the film was shelved, all those things, I auditioned at 20th Century, and I knew that at the time, it was a few years after Shelved or whatever, rumors that Chris Columbus, you know, was going to do the film and all that stuff. And so I had an audition in Chris Columbus's bungalows at 20th Century Lot. And I remember it was for another movie. And I was walking down the hallway, and some doors were open, and I looked, and I saw this little envelope leaning against the door. It said, F4 Picks. And so I stopped, looked at it, and I had to refocus back on what I had to do for audition. So I went to go audition, and as I'm walking back down the hallway, I said, I'm going to go in that room. And I went in that room, and I go, hello, hello. And then some lady from way in the back comes out, yes, may I help you? And I go, yeah, I saw that on the envelope there says Fantastic, you know, F4, you know, Picks. Is that from the new Fantastic Four? And she said, yeah, you know, we're in pre-production and all that stuff like that. We're doing some stills and whatever. I said, oh, cool. I said, well, I said, you know, I played Ben Grimm. And she looked at me, and she's like a producer gal. And I go, and she looked at me kind of strange. I said, yeah, I was in the original Fantastic Four. And she goes, well, there wasn't no, this is the first film we're doing. She goes, I said, oh, no, there was one a few years ago, you know, that Roger Corman had done that I played Ben Grimm, the thing. And she goes, oh, and then she got all indignant on me and said, okay, well, we're doing it now, so there you go. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
She did not do her homework.
Yeah, so she did not.
Unlike you. Did you try to go for it and say, or had it already been cast at that point?
Yeah, it was, I don't know. You know, my agent and my manager tried to get me in on the casting, and they would have nothing to do with us, period.
No, that would have been cool because, I mean, obviously obviously you were inside the mind of the character and you have the physical presence to pull it off, so I would have liked to have seen that. You mentioned about, obviously these interviews, we're talking with everybody involved in the production, and one of the things that comes up that has to come up is, look, this thing has not seen the light of day. It got shelved, and we've covered this extensively as to why it got shelved, but I'm interested to find out from the perspective of the actors, how crushing or how disappointing is that when you really kind of put your heart and soul into a project like this and people aren't going to see it?
Well, let me see. So it's one thing if you're, you know, if you're, you do a role, right, and maybe the movie just gets shelved. You know, and I've done stuff like that before where I've done something and just no one ever saw it. I mean, there's a couple of films that I've done, pretty lower budget things, but I've done some stuff, and it is what it is. But if they hear the situation that really, I think, really drove a lot of people, it really added to the crushing effect, or you want to call it, was that we were allowed to promote this thing for almost a year, a whole year. We finished it like the first in the middle of January. We went to a comic book convention in Los Angeles, the Shrine Auditorium one, where they had we showed the trailer, and the thing was packed and a standing ovation for the trailer, and then they allowed us to promote it.
And you did some talk shows too, right?
Yeah, we did a bunch of stuff. Radio. We went to children's hospitals. We did all these things. Went to comic book conventions. did all this stuff, and they allowed us, and we were allowed, we promoted this, even though it was shelved. No, we weren't shelved yet. We had finished the film, and we were, you know, they did the trailer, they cut the trailer. Me and Alex Hyde White, after they showed the trailer at the China tournament and saw the huge reception, you know, the positive, and everybody was like hooting and hollering, jumping up and down. I was going, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing. We looked at each other and go, man, we need to promote this thing. And that's what we did. Well, I spent like $15,000 of my own money, hired a publicist, this new and upcoming guy, and he went crazy and just promoted the crap out of it with us. And we went all over the country promoting it. Even on a plane coming back from Florida or somewhere, we had the DVD, you know, we had the trailer on a VHS, and we asked the flight attendants if we could pop it in the thing, and we played it on the plane. I mean, we did all this stuff, and
what was the reaction on the flight?
Oh, everybody cheered. It was crazy. Nice. You know, it was crazy. The comic book convention, I have original artwork from, right. I don't know who they're from, but someone told me they're worth a lot of money, of original artwork of Fantastic Four stills from the comic books that artists gave me. I don't know who they were, but I've been told they're worth some money. And the reception was huge. I mean, to me, if you wanted to have what a director would look like, you put him in an encyclopedia, that would be always his own. I mean, the guy was just dedicated and focused on finishing this film. And he took the million, I don't even think it was, everybody said it was $1 million to make this film. I bet you it was less than that. And he did wonders with it for what he had. And I have a lot of respect for him and his dedication and getting, you know, because that was his baby. And, you know, he got an orchestra. He did, that's the same time I think the Jurassic Park came out. So, you know, there's the comparison as to what you had to work with budget-wise.
What are your memories of making the film itself?
I think it was my second film that I had done. And for me, my first one was called CIA Codename Alexa with O.J. Simpson and Lorenzo Lamas and Kathleen Kenmont. And I was still very, very new. So, you know, it was like a kid in a candy store, you know. I was new, still learning the craft, you know, to a certain extent. Rebecca Staub is, you know, great, I mean, very, very nice to me, and great. And I think, you know, they always say the apple doesn't fall from the tree when it comes to actors. A lot of times the characters they play is kind of like a lot how they are in their life. And I would say that to a certain extent with the Fantastic Four as well. Alex Hyde White, you know, he was like the leader, and he kind of came off that way. And Jay was, you know, very fiery and young and, you know, a hot, good-looking actor, you know. So it was, to me, it was just a great new experience, and I was just honored to be a part of it. So,
what projects are you working on right now? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Yeah, go ahead. Right now I've been doing a lot of writing, so I have not worked on anything lately, but I've been writing quite a bit. So, and I have a screenplay that got optioned, and so right now we're working through that and some rewrites and stuff. So it's been really got a lot of personal history to it. It's about a guy who grew up in Detroit, and how he got hooked up with some bad people and tries to fight his way out of it and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool, pretty good story. We'll see what happens. You know, I've always been a writer. Even in college, you know, I took creative writing. I took some classes, man. I've always liked writing. And I remember I did a film a long time ago called Space Marines. Sheesh. Just a little low-budget thing in the 90s. And I asked the producer, could I write the sequel to it? And he goes, no, it'd be great. So cause I showed him some of the stuff that I had written. And so I wrote a sequel to it. And then I didn't. You know, I particularly like some of the shenanigans that were going on, so I didn't pursue that anymore. But I continued to write and just I've written like literally 10 screenplays, and I'm working on sort of one now. So I just I love what's great about it. I get to play all types of characters. So, and it's great because I'll be sitting in my office writing, and I'll have tears coming down my face, or I'll be screaming at the TV, not the TV, but the monitor or whatever. So, acting through roles and whatever. So it's pretty cool.
Well, how can fans of yours find out what you're up to right now?
I have a website, which I don't keep up to date, which I'm a very bad person about. I guess Facebook's probably the best way. I don't think there's anybody else that's, like, mimicking my profile. So I think just the Michael Bailey Smith. And there's also www.michaelbaileysmith.com.
You know, like we mentioned, the Fantastic Four is going to get a lot more attention over the next few months, 20th anniversary of your film. Hopefully we'll see something more in that capacity. Maybe we'll see you in the Marvel Universe somehow. We always look forward to it. And, Michael, I thank you for taking some time to join us today.
No problem. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
Man, I am going to have to go back and check out that Michael and Lou Ferrigno throwdown. Thing versus the Hulk. What could be better? Now, it's one thing to look over some comic books in preparation for a role in a comic-themed project, but it's quite another to know the educational background of the two-dimensional character you're bringing to life. I love that Michael mentioned about honoring the writers. Very, very cool. He's a dedicated actor who brought a lot of depth to Ben Grimm. My thanks again to Michael Bailey Smith for joining me today. To find out more about Michael and what he's up to currently, check out his website, michaelbaileysmith.com, and you can also catch up with Michael on Facebook. Don't forget the soon-to-be-released Fantastic Four documentary, Doomed, the untold story of Roger Corman's The Fantastic Four. Learn more about that documentary at doomedthemovie.com. Catch up on all the episodes of Comic Book Central at our website, comicbookcentral.net. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to all who have been rating the show and posting reviews there. It is certainly appreciated. You can also find Comic Book Central on Facebook at facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Like and share the lair with your friends and family. It's always nice to welcome new listeners. The Twitter feed, @comicbookctrl, and you can send your emails to me, joe@comicbookcentral.net. Next week, hey, you can't have heroes without a vile villain. Fantastic Four February takes a dark turn as I go toe-to-toe with the Lord of Latveria, the devious, dastardly, diabolical Dr. Doom. Well, it's more of an enjoyable chat with the charming and talented actor Joseph Culp. We'll talk about Doom, and if you're a fan of the television show The Greatest American Hero, you definitely want to check this episode out. That's right, Joseph's dad was the great Robert Culp, Agent Bill Maxwell from The Greatest American Hero. And Joseph appeared alongside his father in a classic episode of the show. A lot of comic book talk going on. Don't miss this episode. Until then, keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders. Every dollar was squeezed and is up on the screen.
It definitely didn't go on our bank accounts, that's for sure.